You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's special episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. We are changing up our format today because the interview with the law enforcement officer that you are about to hear in the interview room is so important because it is a matter of governmental corruption that these officers are facing that we are making this a special edition of Blue Lives Radio. The officer that you're about to hear in this interview is aligned with the chief of police. Both are fighting some insidious corruption within the small community of Ridgetop, Tennessee. This is a very small town, and as such, has small town politics all over it. But I wanted to leave this interview in its entirety because it is important for both the knowledge about what is going on in this community to be made public and also to show the courage of the officers involved. Stand by for this week's episode, Blue Lives Radio. I want to tell you about a really interesting company that has a nationwide security presence. It's called offdutypoliceofficers.com. It's actually law enforcement specialists, but you can check them out at offdutypoliceofficers.com. They have a very unique approach to providing security to commercial establishments, residential, any security need that you might have, because they use actual sworn officers. So if you are a police officer or deputy in this country and you want to work extra jobs, as most do, usually you go through your department. This company, offdutypoliceofficers.com, is their website, law enforcement specialists, actually makes arrangements so that you can work those off-duty jobs, and they work in concert with your agency. It's a great opportunity, and also they are they have a great presence in almost every state in the union. So, law enforcement specialists, if you are a law enforcement officer and you want to work extra jobs, contact them, offdutypoliceofficers.com. If you have a security need, if you are a commercial establishment, if you are a construction company and need traffic jobs, contact them. They have the personnel. They are trained. They are law enforcement officers, and they have all the abilities to provide all of your security needs. And they are a great company. They're based out of Arizona, but they're all over the country. Offdutypoliceofficers.com, and it's law enforcement specialists. You can also contact them by phone, 888-572-2442. It's 888-572-2442. If you're a law enforcement officer, you know that wearing body armor, besides being uncomfortable, sometimes can get a little odoriferous, if you will. Wearing that gets sweaty, gets hot. It's difficult sometimes to find the right deodorizer that works, that is natural, that will take care of business. And there's a great product on the market, and it's a Rest My Vest spray. And it's military police grade odor eliminating spray. Now, you don't have to just use it on vests. It's good for all kinds of clothing items. Arrest My Vest spray. Now, where do you get it? Stinkyvest.com. Of course, Stinkyvest.com. And they've got this great product. I highly suggest it. It's not expensive. It works really well. And it what it does is it eliminates odors through absorbing molecules, odor-absorbing molecule. Doesn't use harmful chemicals, and it's great for pets. It's great for all your clothing items. So check it out. Stinkyvest.com. Arrest My Vest Spray. Check it out. Stinkyvest.com.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a guest who is facing quite an issue. He is a 22-year police veteran. He's Sean Taylor. He is a detective assigned to narcotics and canine with the Ridgetop, Tennessee Police Department. He's been a police officer for 22 years, serving also with the Tennessee 22nd Judicial Task Force and Violent Crime Unit. And he has discovered some very disturbing issues within the city of Ridgetop, and is facing a lot of challenges here. Sean Taylor, thank you so much for coming on to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, sharing your story. Tell us a little bit about that town, how you came to work there, and set the stage a little bit for us so that people will understand maybe a little bit more about small town politics and how this issue has risen.
Basically, I had moved several years ago to northern Middle Tennessee, which is north of Nashville, and took a job with the city of Ridgetop, which is a population of about 2,000 to 2,400 people. And it sits on the edge of Nashville, Davidson County. When I first came there, it was seven officers, including the chief, and basically you're expected to be able to take care of all matters of crime, whether it be from traffic, narcotics, to violent crime, things like that. With us being on the edge of Davidson County, we had a plethora of different crimes that are committed. And while I was there several months, I began to see a pattern of the council or the city hall demanding certain number of tickets. At first, I didn't think that much about it, but then we started getting threatening text messages, basically saying, you know, our numbers are down this month, and if they don't come up, we're going to have to start terminating people.
Okay, so wait a minute. Wait a minute. Before you even go any further than this, let me see if I'm understanding. So this is a small town. You got 2,200 people. What is the structure of the police department? Is there a chief of police or a director, first of all, and how many police officers in the town?
Basically, you have the chief, you have the assistant chief, and then the detective, myself as a detective over narcotics, and then you have three other patrol officers, and we all cover shifts. That way we have 24 coverage of the city. The chief works during the day, Monday through Friday, in the office. All of us are available for calls and to be able to deal with whatever comes up within the city.
Okay, so it's a six-person police department. You have a chief, assistant chief, your detective, and then there's three patrol officers. So,
and one other detective.
And another detective. Okay. So seven person police department. Now, what is the city structure as far as, is this a mayor and council type of deal, or how does that work?
Yes, you have a mayor, you have a vice mayor, and then you are to have councilmen or aldermen. And when you put it all together, you're supposed to have an odd number. That way, when they vote on something, you always have a deciding vote, unless somebody abstains from voting. And then you also have the city recorder, who takes down all the information and helps do the day-to-day operations of the city. Now, the mayor and the vice mayor are part-time positions. They are not full-time positions, and they are voted into office, as are the aldermen.
Okay, understood. Now, you were talking about that. Now, you've only worked for this agency for about a year and a half. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. So, tell us again about, you started seeing some directives. Is that the proper term? About basically a quota system for writing tickets. Is that the basics?
The basics of it, yes. We were both, we were told, they would like to see you writing at least 2 tickets or 3 tickets a shift to show productivity and show that we're out doing something. And in the beginning, that's how it was stated. But as time went on, it went from a suggestion to being threatening and receiving threatening text messages stating if we didn't get this number of tickets by this date, then we would be terminated.
Who did you receive these texts from?
The text messages were, the chief received the message from the vice mayor and the mayor, and then he would send out a text message to the officers saying, basically, look, the people across the street, being City Hall, the mayor and the vice mayor, have said if we don't pick up the tickets and the number of tickets, that they're going to start terminating people.
So the mayor and the vice mayor were sending messages to the chief saying, if you don't write more tickets, we're going to start firing your cops. Is that it?
That is 100% correct.
How did the chief respond to this?
The chief was not very happy about it because him being a, all intents and purposes, a cop's cop, he spent his time on the street. He didn't feel like, this is the proper way to go about things. And we have other things to worry about besides sitting for a 12-hour shift looking for tickets. We have several subdivisions that were not getting patrolled. We had other crimes that were being committed that we were trying to investigate to an outcome. And whether it be theft of property to a domestic assault or whatever. And he wasn't going to allow the cases to go uninvestigated just to write the tickets. So he started looking into other cities, and we started looking into other cities as time went on, what their ticket production was versus ours. And what we found out is we were outwriting the majority of cities our size and larger, 4-1.
Let's just to be really clear, so that everyone knows what we're talking about. You have been ordered by the mayor and vice mayor to write tickets. When we talk about tickets, we're talking about traffic citations. Is that correct?
Now, let's be specific on this. We were ordered by the mayor and the vice mayor to write 210 tickets per month is what they demanded, and they actually stated within the meeting, which we have recordings of.
Hold on a second. Are you telling me that in a city that has 7 police officers, they were demanding 210 tickets in total, 210 tickets a month by all officers? Is that correct?
It was 210 tickets in total per month. And basically, with those working 12-hour shifts, we only work 14 days a month. Each officer works 14 days a month. So if one officer was unable to get the amount of tickets he needed for that day because of rain or because he had to answer calls or something like that, then it was on the next officer who came on shift to not just get 3 tickets, but to get 2 extra tickets because the officer previous to him was unable to fulfill the standard, the quota that the city had set.
So in essence, you're told, don't do any police work. Just write. Now, what kind of, so, I mean, I worked the road for a long time. And you could write, I mean, if you were a traffic officer and you were assigned to nothing but that, you could write tickets all day long if you wanted to. But, you know, a lot of these were, you know, we call them chicken shit tickets. Just to generate revenue. Is that what you were ordered to do?
That is exactly what we were ordered to do. And it had to be moving violations that got the full amount. They couldn't be small tickets like the seatbelt ticket because that money doesn't get brought into the municipality. They wanted speeding tickets. They wanted moving violation tickets where they collected the largest amount of money. They didn't want the small tickets and insurance and things like that. They wanted the big price tickets is what they wanted and what they demanded.
How much was it? What kind of, I'm unfamiliar with the fine system in Tennessee. So how much, like, per ticket, if somebody gets caught for speeding? I mean, does it matter if it's 3 miles an hour over or 15 miles an hour? Is it the same fine?
With this city here, they are not going by the actual standard that other cities are. Their moving violation is $142.50, period, across the board, where other cities have from, you know, 0 to 5 over is this, from 6 to 10 over is this, and so on. And the ticket gets more expensive at the rate of speed that they're going. With this city, it's a fine across the board of $142.50 for a moving violation.
So the city collects all the money. It doesn't go to the state. It goes just to the city.
A very small percentage goes to the state. Majority of it goes to that city, to that municipality.
Okay, so
and that money is then put into their general fund.
Okay, and you were $142.50 per citation, which is a lot of money for people that are. I mean, Tennessee isn't exactly a high income state, is it?
No, it's not actually. The area that we're in is a little bit better off than some of the other areas of Tennessee. But, you know, we're looking at the standard motoring public and the people that we end up having to pull over. You're putting a hardship on people because your average median income there is well under $100,000 per year. And that's with both, male and female or whoever working or how they're working. So, when you're imposing $142.50 ticket upon them, you know, that can be a hardship for a lot of people. And then having to write a ticket to somebody and then not being able to pay it, you know, you may have made it so that their license is now going to get suspended and they can't go to work. And so it took the officer's discretion away by, you know, us being ordered and it being demanded and our jobs being threatened to write these citations. You know, a lot of times, just pulling somebody over and giving them a warning and talking to them gets you a whole lot further than issuing them a citation
of
that
course.
They may not be able to pay.
Of course, and, so, every police officer knows that. So, and you were told you had to write how many tickets per month?
It had to be a total of 210 tickets is what was the specific number that the vice mayor put on the quota. It had to be 210 tickets total per month. Now, this city has been known for this for many years, and we have a main two-lane highway that comes through our city that can carry anywhere between 15 and 20,000 people in a 24-hour period. And these people are so accustomed, the motoring public is so accustomed to the issues with the speed through there that you could sit on that main road for up to 6 hours and not catch anybody going more than 5 miles per hour with speed limit because they have become basically trained not to speed through this small area.
Okay, I understand. So, all right. So, I just did a little bit of math on my calculator here. So, the mayor and the vice mayor are demanding that you guys bring in $30,000 a month in ticket revenue, and they didn't care right. about anything else other than tickets. So now, once you have, everyone knows that the quotas are illegal. I mean, the ticket quotas throughout the United States have been tossed out by every court that's across the land. So when did the chief confront the mayor and the vice mayor that this is illegal?
Well, he confronted them and told them, look, you can't do this. And it actually came to a head when the vice mayor contacted the chief and asked him for a breakdown of each officer and how many citations they wrote in a four-month period. And in part of the Tennessee law, when it comes to quota, it states that you are not allowed to do that, to look at an officer's citations and say if he's productive or not productive. And the chief went ahead and put that together for him. But what he also put together for the vice mayor was how many calls for service we had, how many arrests we had, how many open cases that we had. And we've got cases that were going from murders to suicides to drug cases that went up to the federal level that we were trying to deal with, and then, you know, having to deal with this ticket quota thing. And the chief was very adamant in telling the vice mayor, look, you can't do this. You cannot put a quota on us, and then you cannot sit down and look at each individual officer and rank them by how many tickets they write. And the vice mayor spoke back and said, yes, I can. Absolutely, I can.
So you're being given an illegal order. Did anyone take this to a higher level, like the district attorney?
After I gained enough evidence through recordings and documentation, I took it to my local district attorney, assistant DA, and I provided him the documentation on it, which I was able to obtain through the chief. I later found out that there was a ticket log being kept, a daily ticket log that was being forwarded to City Hall, and that's how City Hall knew how many tickets were being written per shift or per day. And that's how they were able to keep up with it, which is another thing that is not supposed to be done under the ticket quota law. So I took that along with the recordings and the documentation I had to the assistant DA. And at first, it really didn't go anywhere. So I moved forward, and I was told that it was being given to the head DA over our county. I waited a little while longer, and several weeks, and had never heard anything back. And later on, I found out that the vice mayor was related to a longtime employee of the DA's office. And at that point, I was like, okay, well, maybe they're slow walking this on purpose to try to make it go away. So I contacted the actual district attorney general office, the next county over, because he covers both Robertson and Montgomery County. And they asked me to come up, and I sat down with the district attorney himself and one other assistant DA, and we went over everything. And he is a former law enforcement officer himself, a great man named John Carney, and he was actually over the corruption unit for the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, and he was also the director of the TBI for 26 months. And he explained to me that he was the one who had ousted the former mayor and vice mayor of another city that was near us called Coopertown for a ticket quota they had. But he informed me that I had 10 times the amount of evidence and that there was no doubt that the law was being broken. And he was going to call for special counsel and recuse himself because an employee of his was related to the vice mayor. and that he was going to call for a special investigative grand jury. So again, I waited. He and I spoke several times, and then I was told that the state attorney general had ruled on some definitions within the law, and that the case had constitutionality issues, and it was completely dropped. And when all of this happened, our city hall, the people at the city hall, being the mayor, the vice mayor, and the city recorder, became very aggressive towards the police department, and we didn't understand why. Because when you have to go to grand jury, all of that's supposed to be kept secret, and nobody's supposed to know. Well, we found out that following week that our city attorney had resigned, and she was the wife of the assistant DA that we had originally taken it to, and that the information that we had on the case had been leaked from the DA's office somehow to our mayor and vice mayor, and the case stopped cold.
Wow. So where does this stand now? Is this, did they just get away with it?
Well, myself and the chief and other individuals had gotten together and discussed everything, because it wasn't just the ticket quota law that we were wanting to take the grand jury. There's been other laws that have been violated by the mayor and vice mayor.
What kind of laws? What are you talking about?
The mayor himself is a business owner within the city of a small produce stand. And he put this produce stand on residential property, and it was never made into commercial property. Therefore, he's not paying the taxes that if another business came in, they'd be forced to pay the commercial taxes on everything, where he was not. Then he bought the land that was adjoining it, which was residential. And again, added on to the produce stand. So we have things like that that are happening that they haven't been held accountable for. And we have documentation of this. With the vice mayor, he and his brother, who's the former mayor of the city, built a subdivision. We're supposed to put in a somewhat like a retention pond for rainwater, according to the civil engineer. They didn't do it. And that caused a roadway and houses to flood. And then the city got stuck putting in 192 feet of 15-inch culvert to try to keep these residents of this road from flooding. And so the citizens got stuck with the bill. And again, nobody's been held accountable. When we found this out, we had found it in the city hall maps that they keep there. We went back 2 weeks later to get a copy of these maps to be able to document everything, and the maps were missing. All of the documentation on this was missing. When we brought it to the city recorder, we were basically told, oh no, that never existed, it's never been here, and basically tried to make it out like what we had seen, we didn't see. One of the other women at the city hall told us to go to the archives, and we were actually able to get a copy of what we were looking for out of archives, which proved that it was removed. The original was removed from City Hall to try to cover up the illegal act.
So you've got obstruction of justice issues. You've got corruption issues, and no one in the district attorney's office is following up on this. Nor is the state?
I actually took it to the state comptroller, and I provided them all of the information in person and helped them make the copies. And I was told that they were going to start an investigation on it. And that was back in early November. And I hadn't heard anything from them. I contacted them about a month ago. They called me back approximately 2 weeks ago and basically stated, we can't tell you if there's an investigation or not. And I had more information that I was going to provide them, and they basically did not want it. So we continued on, and the chief finally had enough and gave the information to one of the local news agencies, and they did a story on it. Once the story was done, that's when things really started to heat up. They basically froze our budget so that we cannot purchase any equipment. We can't go to any training. They cut our gas budget in half, and the vehicle's cards, fuel cards weren't working. Officers have had to put money in their police cars out of their own pocket on several occasions. We have been completely locked out of City Hall. They refuse to talk to us unless it's by email. We have caught the former mayor going to City Hall at odd hours with other individuals of the city and being in there for long periods of time in areas that he's not supposed to be in. And all of this stuff started happening. We pushed the issue to get it out there to the public, and General Carney basically said he couldn't make any statements on it, and he's referred the matter back to the assistant DA that has all of the relations with the members of our city.
This sounds like an incredibly incestuous relationship that's going on. There is now retaliation against your police agency, and against, now, have you guys been threatened personally as well by these people?
I have had, since this is the City Hall has found out about everything, on some of the things that I have wrote, some of the tickets that I have wrote, the people have come in to pay the citations, and they've been directed to file anonymous complaints against me for just whatever they could say. And of course, the chief followed up on it because the mayor ordered him to. And he reviewed, I believe he said, between 20 and 25 videos. And these are all complaints that have been put against me. And when he reviewed the videos, there was nothing for these people to complain about. He was actually able to catch them in line.
Hold on a second, Sean. So when people came in to pay the tickets, they were told by who? By the mayor or vice mayor to make complaints against you?
From what I understand, the mayor, vice mayor, and the city recorder. Yes, sir.
Is that who they would?
And instead of
where they would pay the ticket? They would go to City Hall.
Correct.
Wow.
And then the mayor would have the chief do this, even though it was a direct violation. Anytime there's a complaint against an officer, it's supposed to be a written complaint. That person is then interviewed. Then the body cam footage or the dash cam footage is pulled. It is gone over. Then the officer has a right to be able to basically face his accuser of what they've said and write a rebuttal against it. And I was never afforded that right at all. But once the chief had reviewed between 20 and 25 complaints, they were all found to be absolutely frivolous, that there was absolutely nothing wrong with my stops. As a matter of fact, majority of the people at the end of the stops would shake my hand and say thank you. And he finally told the mayor, look, I'm not going to take any more anonymous complaints like you're wanting me to against Sean. They are to be written down, and if I find out that these people are lying, they will be charged for filing false police report. So he was able to put a stop to that. But since then, they've demanded that we do a daily incident report. And the daily incident report that they've provided does not go along with our agency. It's got the different TIN codes on it from a different agency, which don't match ours. But they're also demanding that the officer fill it out every day, even on the days that the officer doesn't work.
And of course, by doing that, that creates an ability for them down the road to say you falsified reports.
That is correct.
So now I'm looking right now at the Ridgetop City Council board members list here. So the mayor, is that Tony Reasoner?
That is correct.
And the vice mayor, McCaw Johnson?
Correct.
and then I see a couple aldermen. Is everybody in on this deal?
Alderman Mike Harris is the one who originally came to me and had told me about the land development deals and the things like that. He was over zoning and planning, and he had already started seeing some illegal acts that were taking place. And he approached me early into my employment there and asked me to look into the stuff that was going on. And, of course, that's how I got involved into looking into the tickets and things like that. I was probably about 4 to 5 months into the investigation, and then I approached the chief about everything. And that's when I was able to receive the rest of the information, and we started making the recordings and documentation of a lot of the evidence that we've been able to gather.
Well, I don't see his name on the alderman list.
No, he actually, finished his term, and he did not want to go back because he was trying to do everything he could for the citizens. And it's like every time he turned around, they were Tony Reisner and the vice mayor and the city recorder were going after Mike for something. And it just became a point where he knew he couldn't win.
They forced out an honest person in the council because of their activities and their pressure.
Well, they didn't just force Mike Harris out. They also forced out Josh Reisner, who is the mayor's son. The son was calling his father, Tony Reisner, to task in regards to the things that were going on, and it had created a huge rift within the family. So Josh Reisner finished his term and didn't run again, and Mike Harris also finished his term and didn't run again because of the things that the illegal acts that they had seen taking place.
Wow. So at this point, there is, you don't even know if there is a true investigation going on, and you have provided all of this information to the proper authorities, and they're just pretty much ignoring it.
Right. We went to the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, myself and the chief did, about a week ago. And I told him, I said, we've got to be able to, you know, say that we at least went to the TBI and that we exhausted all of our efforts. And we went to the TBI and we met with the ASAC over the area and spoke to him. And what he told us is basically he was not going to do anything and the TBI was not going to do anything because we could not show where these elected officials had gained anything financially with a ticket quota. And I told him, I said, look, I said, there's other parts to this law. And I showed him these parts and he said, I'm sorry. He said, we don't go after politicians for those parts of the law. And I was like, well, how can you say which parts of the law you're going to use on what group of people? You can't do that. The law is right here, and it's across the board, regardless of if you're a citizen, you're an elected official, you're an appointed official. It doesn't matter. The law is the law. And he didn't particularly like that. And he tried to go back and say, well, we don't have jurisdiction unless the district attorney asks us to intervene and investigate. And again, I had to point out to him that it was under their original jurisdiction when it came to corruption or narcotics. They did not have to be invited in. And again, he basically said, well, how about we just have them agree to not run for office again and step down and just do that, and then it just goes away. And to me, that's not acceptable. Just because somebody is an elected or an appointed official, you can't let them get away with stuff. You know, in today's society, they are holding us law enforcement officers to a much higher standard than what the law is actually saying. And I told them, I said, you know, if you're going to hold an officer to a higher standard, you need to at least hold your officials to the letter of the law, and you're not doing it. So at that point, the TBI said that they wouldn't get involved. We were able to get another news story out, and the reporter on the case made contact with the DA's office and was really pushing the issue, and we finally got them this past week to provide us a district attorney from another area to look at the case. And right now, he's just agreed to look at it to see if there's been any illegal acts. And he's going to look over the evidence that we have.
I understand. I mean, anybody with 1 year of law enforcement experience knows that there are illegal acts here. But the question is, will anyone do anything about it? And I've got to say that you and your chief have been relentless in trying to trying to bring justice here, but it's got to be not only frustrating but a little frightening as well, because in essence, that I'm kind of surprised they haven't fired the chief.
Well, we are very surprised that neither one of us has been terminated. And it's not just the retaliation of being terminated that we have to think about. You know, some of the connections with this I haven't gotten into and I won't go into. Some of this stuff has connections that goes much higher than just our local level. And that's some of the things that we're finding out right now. And it's to the point that some of the people that we know that are in higher office or have been in higher office have basically told us, you guys need to watch yourself and stay safe, because there could be other retaliation that would be much worse than being terminated.
Wow. So you're getting, you know, so let's, I want my listeners to be very aware of this. You've been a police officer for 22 years. How long has your chief been a cop?
Probably about 25 to 26.
Okay, so you guys are professional law enforcement officers. You've investigated, and especially with the years that you put in with the state task force, you've investigated murders, you've investigated major narcotics activity, you've investigated organized crime, and now suddenly, from this little nest of vipers that are in power in Ridgetop, Tennessee, a town of 2,200 people, in essence, you're getting warned that your lives may be in danger.
Absolutely. And it's not necessarily just because of these people here in Ridgetop. It's kind of like a chain. If you take out the weakest link, it no longer has its integrity. And what we're finding out is some of the people that are connected to this, some of it goes back generations. And what we're finding out is, basically, if we uncover part of it, it jeopardizes the rest of it. And they do not want the rest of the information out, because if the rest of the information comes out, it could probably change the political structure completely here in the state of Tennessee.
This is really frightening stuff. Now, this would come under the purview then of the FBI. I mean, the FBI handles public corruption, and they, you know, when they get their teeth into something, they generally do a pretty good job. Has there been any efforts to bring the feds in?
There has been talk with a local assistant U.S. attorney, and basically the assistant U.S. attorney has stated that this is a state issue, that unless these tickets were found to be erroneous tickets that we wrote, which they're not, then he would be able to step in. Or if we had targeted a certain demographic, they'd be able to step in. Otherwise, the DOJ or the FBI has basically stepped away from it and doesn't want to touch it.
Retaliation against a police agency by the mayor and the governing body of a city, which is obviously what's been taking place here with the cutting of your budget, with, I mean, your guys not getting the resources that they need to do the job. That's clearly a retaliation. That sounds to me like there's a U.S. attorney who's not doing his job.
You know, and we've got some very good AUSAs here in Middle Tennessee, but if you compare ours versus some of the ones over in the East Tennessee, there's definitely a drastic difference. And I think a lot of that just has to do with your local demographics and things like that. And I just wish that, you know, there was more that we could do to get the ear of somebody who wants to do what's right, which we've got several individuals that are really pulling for us and doing what we can. And some of the information that we've provided them with the relationships higher up have actually answered questions for them and filled in blanks for them as well in regards to how they've had to deal with things on their side of government. And so, like I said, you know, this goes a little bit deeper than what we had really anticipated, and that's where, again, we're running into the issues.
So you tugged the string of something that would be considered a rather, not a very consequential issue as far as, you know, demanding a ticket quota. But you tug that string, and you're finding that it has relationships much deeper, and issues that are far more nefarious with very, very well connected people. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
I'll say this much. I don't want to go much further because I'm afraid if I do, it'll put a bigger target on us. The relationships that we've been able to uncover, and some of this comes directly from the mouths of the people that we've been dealing with, and some of the relationships go back generations and tie to major DTOs or drug trafficking organizations and other corruption that's taken place within the state. And the reason I know this is, after being in law enforcement for 22 years, I've been able to have built many, many friendships with people throughout the state that are in law enforcement currently and have since retired. And when I talk to some of these people and I find out some of the history and the pieces that are coming together, it put everything just put everything together for me on why. When I talked to one of the individuals, I could just say it's a state senator. When I spoke to him and told him of these relationships, he basically told me, I know everything you're telling me is 100% true and accurate because I can confirm the things that you're saying because of the names, the times, and the things that have happened. And I know this for a fact because I've run into it myself. Now, this is coming from a seated senator that's trying to assist us. Well, so when you get into something like that, you know you've pulled on something that's a whole lot bigger. And that has nothing to do with the ticket quota itself. What it has to do with is the relationships. And again, if you have one link in the chain that breaks, the integrity of that chain is gone.
Of course. Well, so, I mean, I'm at a loss, quite honestly, Sean. I'm concerned about you and your chief, not only for your positions, but also for your own safety, and exposing this is corruption. I mean, the misuse of public power for private benefit is the textbook definition of corruption. You have uncovered it. You're doing your absolute best as a law enforcement officer and as a human being who has a moral compass. And it sounds to me like you haven't hit the worst of it yet is what concerns me.
No, I don't think we've hit the worst of it yet, and I'm trying to prepare my chief for what could be coming. And I've already prepared myself. And the only thing I can do is I've been put in this position for a reason. And obviously, I'm going to follow through because it's my job. It's my duty to do that. And if I can't do what's right, then I don't need to be in this job. I'm going to continue forward, and you know, we will see what happens with it. Right now, they are probably trying to figure out how to compartmentalize everything that's going on. That way, there's insulation between the links, and the other links won't be brought in. And if they can try to figure out how to compartmentalize everything, then I think the retaliation, we'll see the retaliation kind of wean off a little bit. But I just don't see that happening. I hope it happens. I just want other officers to know that we are the ones out there on the street holding the citizens accountable. We've also got to hold our elected and appointed officials accountable as well, because they're the ones that are giving us our directives. And you can't do community-oriented policing and then have stuff like this going on the side, because it completely guts what community-oriented policing is about. So this is where law enforcement as a whole, we need to be able to stand up and call out these kind of actions by our local municipalities, our counties, our state, because at the end of the day, we're the ones that are going out there and enforcing the law that they're putting out that sometimes, like right now, is not legal. We've got to be able to hold these people accountable, just like we're going to be held accountable for anything we do. And yeah, it's a bad position to be in right now, and I'm hoping that we're forging the trail of what can happen if officers stand up for what's right.
Well, I applaud your courage, Sean. I will stay in touch with you, and we will follow up with another interview down the road as events unfold. I really want to thank you for taking the time to come on to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, and for your courage, your chief's courage, in confronting this issue and bringing it forth to the public. That is truly what a law enforcement officer stands for. So you watch your six, and you and I will talk again.
Randy, thank you so much for everything you're doing for us and for law enforcement across the nation. And we really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. Shocking, I know. And yet, this is going on in areas of the United States where law enforcement has to face up to local government leaders, very often deeply entrenched in their communities and have been for years. Now, it should be noted that I did reach out to the mayor and vice mayor of Ridgetop, Mayor Tony Reisner and McCaw Johnson, vice mayor, and I left messages for them to call me, reference this interview. They never returned my call. It is always imperative to be fair and honest when reporting on allegations like this. I will welcome the opportunity to speak to them about it, should they choose to tell us their side of the story. I hope you found it interesting. Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, will always be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Thank you. I have a very special announcement to make. You have heard me make a few references over the last few weeks, and if you follow me on Facebook or Twitter, you might have noticed that these notices are becoming a little more frequent. I'm going to tell you about the Wounded Blue, the assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. I've been working on this for more than 2 years. This is a organization that I wish didn't need to exist. But the fact is that when a police officer or law enforcement officer gets injured or disabled in the line of duty, very often they are abandoned and alone by their police agencies, by the people that they serve with, and by the communities. It's heartbreaking. We are creating this organization, which is going to launch officially during Police Week, May of this year. But right now, there's something very special I'm going to ask you to do. And that's going to go to look at the film trailer that is now on YouTube. We've created a feature film called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. We're going to be launching this film soon as well. But I would love for you to check out the trailer. So if you go to YouTube and then put in The Wounded Blue, you'll see the trailer. If you can donate, please do. Go to www.thewoundedblue.org. You can see what we're going to be offering, or you can see how we're going to be changing and protecting the lives of our injured and disabled law enforcement officers. I'm going to need your help. Go to thewoundedblue.org and check out the trailer on YouTube at The Wounded Blue. You'll be hearing much more about this incredible organization as time goes by.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. This week, one law enforcement officer in the United States gave his life. His name is Agent Alfred Zanet Perez of the Puerto Rico Police Department in Puerto Rico. Agent Alfred Zanet Perez was shot and killed while conducting an undercover operation in the Due Bajo community in San Germán, Puerto Rico. He was at a store along PR 330 when a subject in a passing vehicle opened fire, fatally wounding him. A bystander was also wounded in the shooting. The vehicle fled the area and the suspects remain at large. Agent Alfred Zanet Perez had served with the Puerto Rico Police and was assigned to the Drugs and Narcotics Division in Yauco. He is survived by his wife and four children. Agent Alfred Zanet Perez, Puerto Rico Police Department. End of Watch, Friday, February 15th, 2019. May he rest in peace. I want to thank you for taking the time to join me on the Voice of American Law Enforcement, Blue Lives Radio. If you are in need of talking to someone, if you are a law enforcement professional and you are troubled by post-traumatic stress, you have been injured in the line of duty and are having issues dealing with it, contact us at this organization, thewoundedblue.org. Also, check out my books, amazon.com. You'll see them all. Thanks again for joining me on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. We'll see you next week.